got to watch Bill Mollison in a, you know, 1980s sort of movie, and it just captivated me. Hey, this is something I really love. Let's try and go to these different farms. Before that, I was a soccer player.
Hello, and welcome to the Permaculture Vine podcast. My name is Cormac Harkin, and I'm delighted to welcome to the show today Brandon Moncrief. Welcome, Brandon.
Hey, thanks, Cormac. Appreciate you bringing me on.
Thank you very much for coming on. Looking forward to hearing your story. You want to just give us a quick elevator pitch there just to tell us who you are?
Yeah, for me, I just am a permaculture designer, enthusiast, practitioner, you could say. I have my own property in Costa Rica and developing that and enjoying that property and trying to implement a lot of things that, you know, I've learned over the years.
So tell us about your permaculture journey. Where did it start? When did you first sort of get introduced to permaculture?
I actually have a similar story to probably a lot of people. Well, I watched The Global Gardener, you know, and I was doing an internship in Montana at the time. And so the internship wasn't about permaculture per se, but it was about green building, or you could say sustainable type building in Montana, where, you know, you heavily insulate the buildings, you use slip form stone masonry. And so I was learning a lot about some cool techniques from Tom Elpel. He wrote a cool book, Botany in a Day. And so he was kind of my mentor, and I learned a lot from him, just survival skills, wild edibles, wild crafting. So I got into the survival stuff. And so I was a big fan of Les Stroud and Survivor Man growing up. So that's kind of where I took off, was from the survival Bible angle. And so then when I watched, he had some of those, actually VHS, right? So we just popped the VHS in there and, you know, and got to watch Bill Mollison in a, you know, 1980s sort of movie. And it just captivated me. So I was looking for something in college that was similar, but I never found it. I sat down with my biology teacher and I was asking him, you know, how can I figure out a way to design using biology? And sort of, I had a tech background, so I was in computer science at the time. And so I ultimately got a degree in information systems because it kind of took me away from the specifics of computer science into something more maybe conceptual, higher level thinking, contextual type stuff, where it's looking at patterns and systems and how things work together, because I like that stuff. But I wanted to impose it on biology, or at least, you know, nature. And I never found kind of an avenue. And then when I finally saw, you know, permaculture and the way that Bill was explaining it, it clicked. It was like, ah, that's what I needed. But it was fun still to kind of, you know, have the background in technology and then be able to kind of use that in, you know, kind of the framework of permaculture, because I think ultimately people bring in a lot of ideas that complement, you know, and it sort of crosses over between disciplines. So that's kind of my background story of sort of being exposed to it. And then after that, I went on a lot of different, you know, farms and experiences and work days and various teachers and courses and stuff. And so I just kept, you know, giving myself a PDC in California with Penny Livingston's farm there. RDI is what it was called, Regenerative Design Institute. So her partner, James Stark, was there. And it was an amazing kind of hub for people to kind of get together. And there's a lot of cool places up in that area that are showcasing permaculture. And so it was just a lot of fun to kind of begin that way. And I actually met my wife there too. So me growing and just figuring things out from there.
Right. So it's because you met your wife on the, whilst you're doing that as well.
Yeah, it was actually, it's funny. We met online. We actually met on eHarmony. So it was a total digital, you know, the digital age was coming through before Tinder and all that stuff. It was eHarmony. She's from Canada. And so I just, to me, there was still an essence of randomness that happened, you know, for it to come through, instead of, because eHarmony makes you fill out this long application to try and match you with people, you know, and ultimately there was still a little bit of chance, I think, in how we met still, you know. And so even though I'm not I like technology, but I, you know, it's just funny how it all worked out.
So let's take us back your time on the farm. How did you get into that? Was it, did you start woofing?
I did. Yeah. So basically after the internship in Montana, I had met up with Ashley, and then I decided, okay, hey, this is something I really love. Let's try and go to these different farms. Before that, I was a soccer player for a long time. I played in college a little bit pro, and just for me, it was a big shift in my life. It was like soccer all the time, just training, you know, and I still did realize, and at the end of sort of that run, I was about 25 years old then. And so I was like, what do I really want to do? Because I had seen a lot, traveled some, and I was like, okay, well, what do I really want to be doing with my time? And I felt compelled to just keep going and see what would happen. So, yeah, we went to different farms and just tried to gather skills and get the experience. So I got a really good, you know, experiential education from going and just exchanging my efforts, properties, and learning and exchanging and having a rich experience. Yeah. So woofing was great. Internships, I applied for different programs. Of course, the PDC and sort of education, went to festivals. So I just kind of did that whole immersion, and it sort of just unfolded in a cool way, you know, spending various amounts of time in different places.
Yeah, I probably jumped the gun there. I probably should ask you about the PDC first.
Yeah, it was fun because I was an intern at the farm. And so part of the perk of being an intern is that you could get access to the actual PDC. So I spent about 9 months on the farm helping, learning, contributing. And then ultimately there was what they call a four seasons course. So it was a longer course that we were able to kind of take in smaller increments. So it wasn't just a full on, you know, normal, get it in quick. Although I think we did that too, but it was a longer course that met up along the way. And so for me, I like that because it was like taking it a piece at a time. And then going out to the site, observing, thinking about it, you know, and so just kind of immersing, you know, in that way.
Yeah, I like that sort of 9 months study and practice together. It's very fortunate to be able to do that. I think it is a good way of what I call blended learning. All right, so when you did the internship and then you went woofing, was there anything that particularly stood out going to other farms and seeing them? That you really sort of focused on?
Yeah, for me, it was just fun to get sort of a mixture. Like, for instance, milking goats, milking sheep. I've never owned my own, but having done that, I feel like it's, you really understand sort of the nuance and the commitment that you would take on. So I've had chickens before, but just understand the dynamic and the requirements. I think that was big for me. So that stood out as a big piece of, if you're going to go into this new way of life, which is not new, I mean, people have done it forever. So it's just kind of one of those things where for me, I didn't grow up on a farm. I did grow up in a rural place, but, you know, it was just getting that experience was kind of the big thing on somebody else's property with their help, you know? So that was kind of big for me in terms of the difference. It seemed like every farm was different and the ability for them to provide for their needs was different. So I enjoyed that sort of dialogue between what is it that their goals were, what could they actually accomplish, and how did they get, you know, the rest of it figured out? Like, for instance, I think most people homesteading, you know, they've got to have another job. They've got to do something else to supplement that endeavor, you know? So that was always a fascinating dance to observe and see, you know, how did each site sort of differ that way.
And I take it that then influenced your sort of further decision about how you went in your own journey after that.
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, we've had the bug to just travel and see things. So like we went to an internship in Hawaii, and we actually bought some land on the Big Island for a while and had it, and we were starting to develop it. Ultimately, we decided to transition, but we did the internship for 6 months, I think it was, learned a lot. And we got settled, and we really wanted to try and make something, you know, that would be lasting. And so ultimately, if we fast forward, I'm here in Costa Rica And so it's like, finally, I've been able to kind of get into that groove of being in a place long enough. We've lived at various communities too. That's kind of a different aspect. I've got two young girls, and so I've always been fascinated about eco-villages and communities and how that works. So I lived at Full Bloom, for instance, in Southern Oregon for a while. And that was a great example of a community that had like 200 acres of land, and it had all kinds of structures and stuff on it. And it had its own kind of governance and way of doing things internally. And living in those situations, it sort of expands your awareness of a lot of things. So to me, I always found that interesting. So yeah, it was like getting exposed to other people, how they thought, what books they read, what did they do. To me, I kept it with me, you know, on my journey. So, and now as I'm kind of setting my roots a bit more firmly now, it's fun because I can kind of reflect back on those experiences and take kind of the things that I really enjoyed and try to bring them to life here.
And what was it like living in the communities? I can imagine that being very challenging.
It is. It's different. It's a paradigm shift in a lot of ways, because it's sort of, you know, I kind of believe people are mirrors for each other in a lot of ways. So the things that annoy you about somebody, you know, you got to kind of deal with it within yourself too. And, you know, I'm kind of the rogue of my family in a lot of ways, you know, in terms of just going out and people, you know, probably thought I went to a cult or a commune or, you know, something really out there. But it's kind of the permaculture hippie thing, you know. It's like, okay, let's try it. Let's try and live in community. And it doesn't always work out, and it is challenging, but I think it's part of permaculture's call to action in a lot of ways, is sort of the, you know, the governance piece at the end of the book, I think, you know, the manual. It's like, how can we work together? And so I've always been fascinated about that. You know, it's like, how do we get to a place where we've taken care of our needs, we understand the balance between living on the planet, you know, and everything else, so that we're not continuously mining resources. We have a handle on that. And so then after, it's like, when those things are sort of beginning to take shape, there's still this other component, you know, and it's, how do we work together? How do we, and in this day and age, I think it's even more important, you know, the community aspect. So living in these places, it really brings to light the, you know, maybe how we are just needing, we just need more development there, you know, in general. It's like, how do we actually work together and have everybody's needs met? And, you know, there's definitely a lot of different ways to set it up, you know? But yeah, it's a very interesting topic for sure to get into, and even now I'm in a neighborhood. It's not, you know, it's not a really super restrictive type of situation. It's kind of doesn't really have an HOA that manages a lot of things that you have to worry about. So it's kind of a nice balance for me, because you get a sense of neighbors being there for you and talking with them and exchanging plants or whatever, but you don't have a lot of rigid rules that we're having to engage with at the moment. So I think it's a nice blend for me when I can do it, when I've got the energy, and then be able to kind of focus in on what I feel is important and not feel like I have to, you know. I think I've seen other examples where HOAs and even just communities have a different mindset, and, you know, definitely a choice to make for sure.
Yeah, I think it's about finding the community that suits you. You say governance there, and I always think, oh, is governance just rules?
Yeah.
It's like, who sets the rules? How has that shaped your thinking and your thoughts on governance living in these communities?
Yeah, I mean, I think in its simplest way, you go to a property, if you're an intern or you're woofing, and you know it's their thing, you know, and so they've got the rules for the house rules or whatever you need to follow and fit in. And not to say that it's like always clear or always dogmatic, but it's, you know, it's sort of like, that's sort of the catch, is that you're putting your energy into somebody else's project and there's an exchange. So there, to me, that's kind of the beginning, right? But then, like, for instance, with Full Bloom, there was a chance for us to invest and actually be a part of the decision-making process. Even though people who rent there, you know, they can contribute to making decisions on different things. So I've lived at different eco villages and things like that too, where it's more of like a neighborhood and people have meetings and they get together and discuss. And so, yeah, I think for me, it's just an ongoing conversation, you know, and there's people like that we know here in Costa Rica we're friends with, and they want to create their own. They have different ideas of how it can work better. I haven't seen a model that's just, you know, incredibly good at doing everything, you know, because it is such a tall task. It's so subjective and based on the needs and what that certain project and area is sort of predisposed to, I think. So it's really not a, I haven't seen a great model, but we did have Marcelo on our show, and he helped create La Ecovía, and that's a, to me, a shining example, you know, of what's possible, you know. But it's just different, you know. It's just like, it's hard to explain, you know, each experience I've had and sort of chunk it down into a quick story, but it's just there's you know, in terms of making decisions, it's very like my, I'll give you a story from my family. My grandfather started an airstrip park, like a pilot, old pilots who had these Cessna 180s, you know, these small airplanes. And he created a community, and it was really a fun spot in Idaho on the Snake River. And it was cool because he had all the skills. You know, he was a builder, he had all the heavy machinery, he could drill wells, he could create roads, he could build houses and everything. And at the end of the day, he did this whole community, and they, a few of them ended up kind of suing him and taking him to court and stuff. And so it was just, it's tough. I was already kind of exposed to that kind of thing, where it's like people, you know, even if it's a well-intentioned community, you know, and what it was set out to do, there's still the people element. So, yeah, I think it comes with us, you know, getting better at this whole thing of living together. So those are my quick observations.
No, I got it's great. You have a lot of experience there to share. I think it's very valuable. Myself, I don't know if I could live in a community. I don't think people would want me living in a community. But I like that. To me, I like that everybody does their own different thing, and then you just go and pick what you like. So it's I don't think there is one perfect system for everybody because we're all too different. So it's and you just have to find your own patch and make your own rules, and then if people want to come, they'll come. Right, so after community, then you're sort of you've got your partner, and how do you sort of then transition from Hawaii? Is it then to where you are now?
Yeah, we just kind of, a lot of it was based on our kids, you know, and so my wife was really passionate about having home births and stuff. And so, you know, we had our kids at home and we had midwives, and we sort of had to transition different ways based on our economics. You know, I still coached and I still did other things. You know, I worked at nurseries, I worked at farms. I just had a different sort of, you know, kind of patched together, you know, at various moments, you know, points in time, you know, what we were doing. So we went, Utah is where a lot of my family lives. Oregon is where we lived for a while. So we kind of bounced around in different places. And I learned a lot about real estate actually too while I was in Oregon. So that was a lot of fun. And sort of a different angle, you know, because like I was saying with these eco villages, you know, there's the developer angle of, you know, how do you actually pull that off if you're going to develop land and so on. So I really enjoy sort of expanding and not just, you know, sticking in one lane and looking at something from different angles and sides. So yeah, we had our children, and then we kind of went from Oregon to Utah, back to Oregon. And so we just kind of bounced around. And then ultimately, I mentioned La Ecovía, and we saw an episode of Down to Earth with Zac Efron, and he highlighted, which is Casa Sula. And so we said, hey, let's give that a shot. And so we came down to Costa Rica because of that mostly. You know, it was self-directed learning for kids. So it's one of those things where it's like, you know, we felt inspired and we just said, okay, let's go for it. And let's expose ourselves to a lot of different things. And the school, one story that kind of makes it real for me is We went there one day, and we have two girls. One daughter is right now, she's 5, and the other one's 7. So the youngest one was there with us, and she was trying to tag along and follow the older one. And the older one was jumping up and doing this thing. And the teacher was there, and we were just kind of getting used to the school. And so I was so used to just helping my youngest daughter. You know, she wants to climb something. She wants to, you know, be like her sister, right? So I help her up onto this, you know, basically this sort of toy platform. And so the teacher said, well, we don't do that here. And so it was like, that was just sort of the beginning of a longer conversation about how, you know, if they are not capable of doing it themselves at the school, they don't want them to get used to that, because then there's a dependency, and that there's a, you know, if you're not ready to climb up and you can't do it on your own, then we don't assist. And it's kind of, I'm kind of, you know, more that way than probably most people. It's like, come on, you can do it yourself, or, you know, we're going to cultivate that, you know, we're not going to just always be there to lift you up. You know what I mean? So, but that sort of, you know, shows a little bit there about the school's mentality and philosophy, is that, you know, when they're ready, they're going to do it. And when they feel comfortable and they can balance and they can, you know, then they're ready and they can take it on themselves. So it's kind of the same thing with the education, is that, you know, most parents are going to help, and they're going to sort of, in some ways, be a crutch or coddle, or, you know, it's like, if that's extreme, right? But it's allowing the kids to be self-directed in a way that says, when they have that curiosity, then they're ready, you know? And so it's so easy for us, I think, to get in that paradigm of being a type A parent, where it's just like, okay, we got to just help. They got to make straight A's. They got to get to the reading level by a certain age, you know? And so we push, and the kids, they kind of get fed, versus cultivating that need for themselves and saying, hey, I actually want to do that. And I'm going to be curious, and I'm going to figure out how to do it. And that's kind of the gift that I think the school really shares, is that, you know, they'll figure it out a different way than maybe you've even considered. And that's for them, you know? And so there's sort of a step back and observe more, and let that dance happen on its own, and see what goes on, you know? And for me, I like to be engaged, you know, and help them. But yeah, it's kind of, that's an example of sort of the experience, you know, that was unique, you know?
Yeah. All right. So you mentioned at the start, you're a permaculture designer. So can you tell us how now you started designing for people? Do you design for people?
Yeah, definitely. I love designing. I kind of have always been, since the PDC, since looking at that, you know, Global Gardener, I was like, man, this is great. I want to learn these skills. So yeah, for me, I'm with Geigo right now. It's Grow Your Grass Off is our name. And we help people grow food, and we help support and be, you know, an accountability partner, you know, in terms of helping people just meet them where they're at, you know, and part of what we offer is design. So before that, I was at Food Forest Abundance. And so I was there for about a year and a half, and that was amazing. We helped over 100 people, you know, with designs in a pretty short amount of time. So that to me was a great sort of chance at building on information and things that I'd kind of acquired, but then I didn't have a chance to kind of get in there and synthesize it and put it together and have all those sort of building blocks laid out, so I could have kind of a workspace to really mentally have the time to process it. So yeah, the design to me is just it's kind of how I think. So on my own projects, I always did that. So like I mentioned, real estate, you know, I would, whenever we would move around, it's like, if we bought the house, I would always try to add value by bringing in the design component, you know? And so I didn't have to explain it to anybody, you know, what I was doing, but in my mind, I was processing as a designer, you know, how do I want to create this space? You know, how do I want to make it, you know, integrate with my life? So yeah, that's kind of the quick synopsis for me in design.
So when did you start designing then? So you, was it was Food Forest Abundance, and that's when you started, or were you designing before that?
I think I was designing, like I said, for myself and for family before that. Yeah. And then, Food Forest was kind of my big chance to kind of really take that to a lot of people. Yeah.
Yeah. And for the designers out there, do you want to share what like software you were using? What do you think of the software that's available?
Yeah, it was an interesting progression for me, because I really enjoy the free software that's out there and just trying to see what we can do with that and kind of adapt. But ultimately, after playing with a few different things like Garden Planner, and I settled in with Affinity, and I really enjoy it. I think it's something that, you know, it's a one-time payment, and then you get access to, you know, pretty much all the tools that I think you really need to have when it comes to creating a base map or a design with that. So I really, if I'm recommending, you know, and I don't have access to a lot of the landscape architecture type of programs that can cost a lot more, you know, but as far as a basic program, I think Affinity Designer is really a great fit.
Yeah, I use Affinity as well. I really like it. If you say it's one-time payment, tried Inkscape, wasn't very good. But that's what I used Affinity. Tried Garden Planner. Again, I moved away from that after a short while, just because I got better at Affinity. And then I was able to sort of get your own rhythm and your own groove then with Affinity. So I really like that. So if I come to use Geigo now, what kind of, you say you're accountability, how does that work? So if I'm a beginner gardener, just got some land, and I phone you up and say, Brandon, help me out. What can you do for me?
Yeah, it would just, I think it would depend on kind of your level of commitment and what you wanted to do, kind of your goals. But, you know, at the beginning, you know, you can have a coaching session with us, which is basically a consultation, you know, and just see how we can help you. And if you want to dive into a specific project, you know, we could definitely just zoom in, you know. But after that, in terms of the biggest piece for us with accountability is what we call personal training. You know, it's kind of the idea that, you know, we're there for you just like you would go to the gym, you know, and we know that you've got goals that you want to actually accomplish something over this growing season. And we try to lay that out in a systematic way. So we have an app that is web-based, and you can just plug into that app, and it has a lot of cool things in it. So it's like, you can see your deliverables. You can see what the next set of tasks are. You can see your calendar. You know, you can basically stay in step with kind of where we're trying to guide you, you know? And so that's really just maintaining that and having, I guess, for us at Geigo, we really want to make it easy so that, because we know people, you know, are strapped for time and they want to make a difference, but it's so, I think the years of, you know, digesting a lot of this information, trying to bring that into a place where it's like, we want to save people all that extra time and effort of curating information. And we had Rob Avis on our show recently, and a good analogy for me is determining signal from noise. We want to create signal for people so that it's very cohesive and we can get right down to the tasks. And people who are wanting to be curious about more, we can dive into the information and understand it. But to provide that support where it's really like, okay, what's next, you know, that way people don't get overwhelmed and we can just kind of keep them tracking along. So that's our biggest program, personal training. And then the design is kind of the third phase of what we're doing right now, is so the design can bring a lot of custom elements to what it is that we would suggest for your project, you know, beyond just the tasks at hand, you know, more of that long-term vision, strategic plan, which I think is definitely helpful, but it's, you know, obviously growing, if you just want to get to growing food, you know, it depends on what track kind of you're wanting, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's really good. I like the coaching side of it for, it is good to get that calendar and that sort of accountability and to have you sort of there, cheerleading at the corner.
Yeah.
So tell us about Geigo. How did that start?
Yeah, Geigo, it's, Dr. Ian Scott and Lana Medina, we just wanted to create something because we noticed we all worked at FFA before, which is Food Forest Abundance. And we had a lot of good experience from kind of seeing where people were at and talking with lots of folks and saying, okay, you know, what is it that your goals are? And we got kind of an idea that we felt like the DIY client needed to, you know, not just get a design in hand and be able to say, okay, this is wonderful, you know, and even though there may be action steps with that to some degree, you know, really want to support that process. Kind of back to the previous question, you know, it's like, what about the support and accountability to get this project through, you know? And so that's where it started from, is this idea of, okay, let's really specialize in this process of education, not just to educate, you know, so people know, okay, the difference between living soil, you know, and just basic soil, you know, but the idea of actually being able to implement something that they are wanting to try and create in their own yard. So, and it's, yeah, so it's just that mission of helping people as much as possible grow food and really focusing on the suburban landscape, you know, for the most part, and people who are wanting to translate or, you know, transition from grass to food. And so that's kind of the name Grow Your Grass Off. That's kind of how it came to be, is, you know, it means a lot, it means different things for other people. But like for me, you know, I don't mind grass, you know, but it's almost like we can use it, you know, where it's needed. But at the same time, if we really put effort into developing and cultivating plants that are edible, you know, the grass just becomes the path, or it becomes sort of this auxiliary thing that's not taking up so much input. You know, you may trim it a little bit just to keep the path nice, but you know, for me, that's kind of my philosophy on it, is that it's not the mainstay. It's supplemental, you know, to the experience, where you, maybe you've got some young kids who like to enjoy it, you know, but it's the garden is the emphasis. And if we can put our effort into, you know, sheet mulching and doing all the different techniques to where we can get that yard to sing, you know, and be in harmony kind of with the environment, bring nature back and have food and have this experience, that's kind of where my mind goes with the whole, you know, the concept of growing your grass off, you know. So it's no longer kind of, that's a big point, you know, it's kind of a rabbit hole, but you know, pesticides, herbicides, all that, you know.
Yeah, I can't argue with you. Any of that. Yeah. That's all good stuff. So tell us now, so you've had a great career, different experience here. So this is about careers, education, and business. So from your PDC, you know, you've had all this experience working for somebody else, now your own place, all these woofing. Would you have any advice for someone who's just finished a PDC and they're looking at, right, what do I do now? I just want to get on their career. What advice would you have for them?
Yeah, I think it's fun, because like what you guys are doing at Vine to me is great. You know, you can break it down and you can bring across sort of the basic building blocks that somebody might use, you know, so they might really enjoy their PDC and say, I want to get right into this. And I kind of wish back in the day that I, you know, had that opportunity or took that opportunity to say, you know, develop those things that I really, you know, maybe could have been at a different place at this stage, you know, and so help more people or whatever. So yeah, I mean, the biggest takeaway for me is talk to people who are doing it. And if it's something you really want to engage with, start developing those skills and start with your own property, you know, even if you're renting, you know, just do a design on your own place in your backyard. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. You know, go out there and ask your neighbors, ask your family, hey, can I do a design for you? And once you get a few under your belt, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, it could be as complicated or as simple as you really want to make it, you know, and trying to serve whoever it is that you're, you decide to link up with. To me, that's the goal. You know, it's what can you do to make it so that they can take action and that you can share what it is that you're trying to bring through. So talking with people who have done it, asking questions like what platforms and what things do you use, you know, and continue to network. I think it's such a big thing to have that skill of sharing. And I think that's a really big piece to it all, because it doesn't do much good, I don't think, if we all are good at designing, but we're not we're not bringing it all the way around as far as in the community. We got to be able to share it too.
Yeah, I like that. But about the networking, getting people to look at your work. And we actually have a designer's kit if you're a beginner designer and you want to know the questions they ask. Because it is a skill that I learned working with you at Food Forest Abundance, was actually asking the right questions. Do you get the information back that you need? These are things you don't think about when you're doing your PDC. It's like how to extract, and it's a skill you have to learn. So what next now for your own place? Have you got any plans for that?
Yeah, I just finished the casita and kind of what I did, you know, experiential learning. And so for me, that's kind of the biggest push that I can, I got to kind of continue to design out, because I've got 2.5 acres. So I've done, you know, probably half of the property, and then we just unlocked another half. So we've got a fish pond. We've got a little greenhouse here in Costa Rica. They don't use full on greenhouses. It's kind of just like polycarbonate sheets, you know, and you leave the sides open. So you get a little bit more heat under there, and you keep things from getting, you know, totally soaked. That, you know, certain plants like that more. But yeah, that's kind of continue to develop the property in a way that allows us to grow more food and cultivate the plants that we really need to consider, you know, and learn, and just say, okay, this, that's kind of how I see it, is just an ongoing learning that happens. So we've got our house built. We can bring guests on. It still needs work. You know, there's different areas of the property that need more intention and more, you know, love and care. So, but every pineapple we get, you know, I plant it. So it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, it's plugging along, so that we're not at that full sort of stage of Food Forest being up and out, but we've got about 2 years now where the trees are starting to take root and get some vertical growth going. So it's fun to, I love educating and helping. Having events possibly here would be fun, you know, at some point in the future, just as a demonstration. You know, I think people can really, let's just say they want to design, you know, if you can show them and have them walk through it, that's kind of my goal here, is I want it to be a showcase in a way that's, it's not manicured horticulture, you know, garden. It's something where it's experiential. You can climb up the ice cream bean tree. You can get in there and experience it like a kid would. So that's kind of how I envision it.
No, that's class. So a casita, what is a casita?
Oh, just a little house, like a little rental. So it's an A-frame that is got a loft in it. And underneath the loft is the bathroom, and then you've got the kitchen and living room and a balcony, so it kind of looks out into the jungle. So I've got a tour on our show that we can put in the description, you know, if people want to see that, can check it out.
I will definitely do that. And is that available now?
Yeah, definitely. Right. We can set up it'd be great to just chat with anybody first, you know, before, just to see, you know, make sure we're in alignment and that we can actually help, you know, guide. Because, you know, living in the tropics is different than a lot of these temperate climates. So there's definitely not, there's carryover, but it's more of an experience, I suppose, you know. And I think that's kind of the beauty of it too. Like for me, ultimately, my goal would be to have multiple sites, you know, so that I could learn. And that's kind of just a personal journey that I'd like to go on. It's just, I've got a place in Costa Rica. I can go to the mountains, you know, I can go, you know, a lot of these different places and just continue to absorb the change that happens. So, but yeah, here in Costa Rica, it's beautiful. There's a lot of, it's harder to grow probably than people expect. You know, there's just different challenges, you know, that you'll face, but it is, there's a lot of favorable things too.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll get a visit someday.
That'd be awesome. Fantastic.
But busy at the minute though, with the 3 kids and a lot of stuff going on. Maybe next year, that would be great. Brandon, is there anything else you want to share with us now? That anything else? Any parting words of advice? Or
I just think, you know, for me, it's fun to see what you're doing, Chips, and continue to build that network of people you know, and putting aside any of those, you know, personal, you know, conflicts, or, you know, like you were saying maybe before, is that, and I've talked to other people in the permaculture world, sometimes we get to this point where it's like, there's a feeling that there's not enough, you know, so it's like, well, you know, we got to kind of protect what's ours and stuff. So I think for me, the stuff, the something that's come to my mind is just, if we can get out of that mindset that there is scarcity, you know, that there's not enough, and that we got to kind of hold on to what is ours. You know, I feel like that's a big thing when it comes to permaculture and designers in general, cross-pollination concept, where people collaborate more. You know, that's what I appreciate about you and what you're doing too, is, you know, it's, I think there's an openness to evolving, sort of like open source software. You know, it's like, if we realize that, to me, permaculture, the beauty of it is that it's evolving and it's never going to be static. It's like, there's going to be new guilds, there's going to be new things that happen. And so just trying to lean toward that more, you know, and celebrate each other, be able to kind of lift each other up, especially at this time where, you know, it's really needed. I feel like a lot of, if people are interested in designing and helping others, and because there's all kinds of issues that we could talk about, you know, of supply chain issues, or, you know, having to eat bugs and insects and so on. It's like, you know, there's all kinds of reasons to get into this and ways to help people. But yeah, I would just say it's, I really want to support that sort of networking of people so we can continue to improve, you know, and learn. So that's kind of my two cents. No,
I definitely agree with that. I think, again, that scarcity mindset is, it only leads to scarcity. And yeah, all them problems you mentioned, plus 100 more, permaculture has, yeah, the solutions for them. and we need trained permaculturists to do all this stuff. I think there's plenty to go around myself. So I'll second what you said there. Brandon, thank you very much for coming on. It's been great.
Appreciate you, Cormac.
Guys, that's been Brandon Moncrief. You may probably see him again, because we're going to sort of expand the podcast out a bit and start doing some roundtables, just different discussions. So instead of just the one-to-one interviews, maybe get a group of people together just to discuss certain issues, maybe something out of the news that permaculture can provide a solution to, instead of the doom and gloom, putting some positivity in there. So Brandon will definitely be joining us again in the future very soon. Brandon, thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care.
Guys, if you want to check out the previous episode, Mike Jones, just click on the link wherever it ends up. And thank you very much. I'll see you next week.